Follow us on social media to stay up to date on the latest global developments. You can keep in touch with us by following us on Twitter at twitter.com/parstodayen. You can also follow IRIB English Radio on Instagram via instagram.com/parstodayenglish.
Path towards enlightenment.
In the name of God, the All-Compassionate, the All-Merciful. Salam, dear listeners, and welcome to our latest episode of Path Towards Enlightenment, which is an endeavor to make you and us familiar with an easy and fluent explanation of God's final scripture to all mankind, the Noble Quran, that was revealed to the last and greatest of all messengers, Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny. Last week, we completed explanation of Surah Jin, and today we take up the next surah, that is Surah Muzammil, the number 73 in the serial order of compilation of the Noble Quran. It was revealed in Mecca and has 20 ayahs. The surah revealed in the early days of the Prophet's universal mission of Islam opens by addressing him as Muzammil, or the enwrapped in a cloak or sheet. This epithet means the one renouncing the vanities of the world, or separating himself from all trifle matters for the purpose of meditation, which indicates the Prophet's preparedness to receive the divine commandments to guide mankind. The surah describes how God relaxed the early regime of devotion first decreed to the Prophet and prepared him for the weighty message of divine revelation. The Prophet is urged to be patient against the enemies and is informed in Ayah 10 of the punishment that awaits the disbelievers in hell. Ayah 15 refers to the punishment that befell Egyptian tyrant, the Pharaoh, while alive, thereby drowning him in the sea. According to a hadith from the Prophet, whoever regularly recites Surah Muzammil will not face hardships in this world and in the hereafter. We invite you to listen to ayahs 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم يا أيها المزمل تحمل قم الليل إلا قليلا نصفه أو انقص منه قليلا أو زد عليه ورتل القرآن ترتيلا إنا سنلقي عليك قولا ثقيلا.
In the name of Allah, the All Compassionate, the All Merciful. O you wrapped up in your mantle, rise to observe vigil through the night, except a little, a half, or reduce a little from that, or add to it, and recite the Quran in a measured tone. Indeed, soon we shall bestow on you a weighty word. The Almighty Creator affectionately addresses His best of creation with words which mean, O you who are wrapped in your mantle, that is, O you who is girded to undertake that which has been entrusted to you, so rise up at night for prayer, especially the post-midnight prayer, and for contemplation at a time when people are normally asleep after the daily routines. Tahajjud, or the post-midnight prayer, is not compulsory but highly recommended. The Prophet, his successors, the infallible Imams, and the members of his progeny, the Ahlul Bayt, as well as the devout believers, never missed it. The All-Merciful Lord, however, does not want the Prophet and the true believers to forego sleep the whole night, as is clear by the use of the word qum, or rise from sleep, as well as the words regarding the night such as nisf, or half of it, and qalil, or a little part of it, and zid, or increase in its duration. All this indicates that no burden is imposed upon the ardent worshippers who could decrease or increase their nighttime prayers and contemplation, depending upon their spirit of enthusiasm and physical strength, in the quietude and tranquility of midnight. The All-Wise God urges the recitation of the ayahs of the Noble Qur'an with emphasis on the word tartil, that is, its mediative recitation, in a well-ordered manner or a measured tone, since contemplation on the Divine Message is the best means of strengthening faith, spiritual growth, steadfastness, and proper cognizance of the Almighty Creator. Ayah 5 speaks of bestowing the Prophet with a weighty word, which seemingly implies the timeless wisdom of the final heavenly scripture to all mankind, that is, the Noble Quran. It also reflects the fact that the responsibility to guide mankind is such a weighty and momentous task that the Prophet requires an astute assistant in accomplishing his mission. This is clear by the request of Prophet Moses to God for designating Aaron as his deputy, and the divine commandment to the Prophet of Islam to proclaim as vicegerent his worthy cousin Imam Ali ibn Abi Talib, peace upon him. These ayahs teach us that, number one, Islam views the tranquility of the night as the best time to supplicate and meditate rather than sleeping all through it or wasting it on pleasures. Number two, the late midnight prayer and contemplation in the quietude of night strengthens the spiritual ability for better performance of daytime duties. And number three, recitation of the Quran with proper pondering on its message enlightens the mind and uplifts the heart. Let us listen to ayahs 6 and 7 of the same surah.
Inna nashi'ata al-layli hiya ashaddu wat'an wa aqwa muqila. Inna laka fin-nahari sabhan tawila.
Indeed, the watch of the night is firmer in tread and more upright in respect to speech. For indeed, during the day, you have drawn out engagements. The merits of late night worship, including contemplation, in an atmosphere of tranquility, when calm and silence prevails everywhere, free of the distracting duties of the day, is the most suitable time for purifying the mind and firming up the soul through reflection on realities and gaining the proper cognizance of God Almighty and the wisdom of His commandments. Moreover, waking up at night for prayer is not easy, since it is a sort of a struggle against oneself. Hence, it makes a person strong in overcoming physical desires. Elsewhere, in Ayah 17 of Surah Sajdah, the Noble Quran mentions the reward of those who wake up for the post-midnight prayer, saying, "No one knows what has been kept hidden for them of comfort as a reward for what they used to do." The next ayah tells the Prophet, and through him the believers, that daytime is for attending to and discharging duties. For the Prophet, it is guiding the people, elucidating the divine message, and providing solutions for the various issues of the society and matters pertaining to the individuals. For us, the ordinary believers, daytime is fulfillment of our duties as a citizen or a member of the community, or a wage earner for the family. Of course, while discharging all these duties, we should realize we are in the presence of Allah the Omnipresent and carry out these tasks in the best possible manner. These ayahs teach us that number one, the midnight vigil is very effective in self-building. Number two, the success in daytime affairs requires a strong relation with God at all times, especially the nightly hours. And number three, it is the power of prayers and reflection on the flawless eloquence and timeless wisdom of the Noble Quran that provides us the clarity of vision to properly carry our daytime duties. In conclusion of this week's episode of Path Towards Enlightenment, here are ayahs 8 and 9 of Surah Muzammil.
وَاذْكُرْ اسْمَ رَبِّكَ وَتَبَتَّلْ إِلَيْهِ تَبْتِيلًا رَبُّ الْمَشْرِقِ وَالْمَغْرِبِ لَا إِلَهَ إِلَّا هُوَ فَاتَّخِذْهُ وَكِيلًا.
So celebrate the name of your Lord and dedicate yourself to Him with total dedication. Lord of the East and the West, there is no God except Him, so take Him for your trustee. What is intended here is not just the remembrance and glorifying of the lofty name and attributes of the Almighty Creator, but proper attention in order to purify the soul and foster the spirit of total dedication to His decrees. In other words, it means God-weariness within the framework of a life devoted to the family and the society in view of the physical faculties He has bestowed. This means the one and only God does not want true believers to turn away from lawful amenities of life as practiced by certain self-styled ascetics who shun the bounties of the world by calling themselves Sufis or the Christian monks, and the sadhus of Hinduism and Buddhism who do not marry and feign celibacy while secretly indulging in sins and carnal pleasures of the flesh besides hoarding wealth and abusing powers. The next ayah says the Almighty Creator of the universe is absolute Lord of all places, beings, things, and the natural phenomena. Therefore, believers should not be discouraged by the plots or hostility of the wicked and evil persons. There is no God beside Him, neither any deity to symbolize Him, nor any idol to identify Him. He alone deserves to be worshipped and relied upon. From these ayahs, we learn that, number one, expression of the lofty name and attributes of the Almighty Creator should be from the depth of the heart and with firm conviction so as to detach ourselves from pointless distractions, vanity, and trivial matters. And number two, we should solely rely upon God and worship Him alone rather than trusting mortals, however powerful, and committing the cardinal sin of disbelief and idol worship, since He, omnipresent, is Creator and Master of the entire universe.
This is A to Z. An introduction into Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson, Islamic spirituality is necessary for everything. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, it's an honor to be here at your service. We are talking about Islamic lifestyle, and in the program today we want to talk about something specifically, which is this idea that spiritual purification and spirituality is something which is necessary for everything. Now, when we're talking about Islamic lifestyle, of course, we very fully well understand that spirituality is something which is an integral part of Islamic lifestyle. Of course, if we want to talk about a physical body and a physical body that has a spirit within it, that spirit is spirituality, and Islam promotes and emphasizes both the physical and the spiritual aspects of not only a human being, but really the cosmos, in general. Now, spirituality is something, of course, which is incredibly important in all of these aspects, right? The spirituality and this, great moral and ethical virtues that bring about perfection for a human being, well, that's really the core gist of everything, right? It's something that is incredibly necessary in our lifestyle, especially in our Islamic lifestyle. You know, without that spirituality, we'll just have this empty shell of a body and an empty shell of a life, and it really will not be satisfying at all. And that's something that we see across the world, that despite having the material means beyond imagination, because there is no spirituality, people are suffering on a global level. Welcome back. This is A to Z on IRIB English Radio. So we're talking about Islamic lifestyle and how spirituality is really integral to everything. We talked about how that, you know, you can have all of the material means and resources, you know, at your disposal, all of them. And there are people and there are certain, you know, segments of societies across the world in which you see that, that the material aspects are completely taken care of. But despite that, because the spiritual aspects and spirituality is not being addressed within these human beings or within these societies or these segments of society, we find that people are suffering, people are sad, people are not happy overall, and that is because the spiritual needs are not being taken care of. And this is precisely where Islam comes into play. Islamic lifestyle, one of its fundamental aspects is spirituality and this connection with Allah and this connection with the afterlife and this connection with eternalness and eternal happiness and eternal life and these moral and virtues. All of these things are really truly bring happiness to a human being. Islam is the one who is promoting this and teaching this to a world which is devoid of all of these spiritual aspects as we move forwards in time. And really everything. Science without spirituality is a danger. Knowledge without spirituality is danger. And of course, any kind of a lifestyle without spirituality is a danger. And so if we want to attain that Islamic lifestyle, one of the things that we're going to have to do is to pay attention to our spirituality and our spiritual selves.
IRIB English Radio. Our website is parsetoday.ir.
You can email us at englishradio@irib.ir.
The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily, round the clock, for listeners across the globe. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard by the internet, shortwave, FM, and satellites. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran while shortwave, 31 meters, 9,650 kilohertz, every day, from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Southern Africa can tune in to the English service of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz, every day, from 1920 to 2020 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our program via FM 91.5 MHz. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAT5 and IntelSat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.ir/en. Now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio at irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about our audio quality and other means. Thank you.
In the limelight.
Almost 400 schools in Gaza have been damaged or destroyed during the Zionist regime's genocidal war. These schools previously served approximately 460,000 children and 17,000 teachers. According to United Nations estimates, at least 55% of schools will require either major repairs or complete reconstruction. Regarding this issue, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. The Electronic Intifada wrote, Khaled is a baby, born shortly before the Zionist regime declared its genocidal war on Gaza. He has spent most of his life in very unhealthy conditions. In the early stages of the war, his family had to evacuate their home in northern Gaza. Sahar, Khaled's mother, said, We had to walk on streets filled with rubble. We were under constant bombardment. It was absolutely terrifying. Khaled's parents are unable to provide him with bare necessities. Diapers are scarce, so are infant formula and other food items. Sahar said, He doesn't even have enough winter clothes or blankets to cover him during the cold nights. Khulud, a relative of Sahar, has a one-year-old son. Displaced and malnourished, Khulud is not able to produce sufficient breast milk for her child. Her son requires special diapers, as otherwise his skin becomes irritated. Finding them is impossible, Khulud said. Look at the prices. A pack of diapers costs $50, 100 grams of baby milk, $3, a pack of oats or wheat seeds, $7, a jar of honey around $50, the list goes on and on. She added, Given these prices, it would cost us around $200 a week to take care of him. That's way more than we can afford. Mahmoud has fled Gaza City's beach refugee camp for Deir al-Balah in the middle area. His four-year-old son has started urinating in his sleep. Bedwetting is a known symptom of childhood trauma. The boy's life is truly miserable, Mahmoud, who has seven other children, said. He added, He is at the age where he should no longer be wearing diapers, but he must do so at nighttime now. Mahmoud is a fisher. It is too dangerous for him to ply his trade. Even before the current war, the Zionist regime was frequently attacking fishers. Mahmoud said, I have lost everything in this war. My home, my work, I have nothing left. It causes great pain to go back to my tent every single day and see this child crying for milk and bread. Mahmoud has left Al Rimal, a neighborhood in Gaza City, for Deir al-Balah. His wife is pregnant. Mahmoud said, I am extremely concerned about her and my next son. We are praying every single day that this war ends. I've lost my work, and we do not know what has happened to our home. I'm just baffled and bewildered. Ola Nasser has been devastated by the genocidal war on Gaza. Her husband and her son were killed when the Zionist regime attacked their neighbor's home in the southern city of Khan Yunis. She recalls that a very heavy and large missile fell on her house during the attack. Nasser was upstairs with her daughter, while her husband and son were down the stairs. She said, "Suddenly I found myself on the street. I was on a pile of rubble." When she was brought to hospital, Nasser learned that her husband and son had been killed. "My heart is still aches for the loss of everything," she said. "My husband, my child, and the school where I worked." Nasser is a science teacher. Before the war, she was working in the Shajaya neighborhood of Gaza City. "The area where my school was located is completely destroyed," Nasser said. Like so many others, she had hoped that the Zionist regime would spare schools which have become shelters for displaced people. Nasser said, "Schools and hospitals are supposed to be safe places in the war." Almost 400 schools in Gaza have been damaged or destroyed during the current war. These schools previously served approximately 460,000 children and 17,000 teachers. According to United Nations estimates, at least 55% of schools will require either major repairs or complete reconstruction. Samia Salem taught math in Tel al-Hawa area of Gaza City before the war. She laments how Israeli regime troops laid siege to the area. Schools and other civilian infrastructures were shelled. She said, "There will be no schooling for children this year. Then we will need a long period to restore everything. That means students could lose another year, and this will greatly affect their motivation and the level of their education." Salem fled Gaza City for Rafah in the south 2 months ago. With classes unable to function as normal, she had observed how children and parents are still trying to learn in a more informal setting. Many children in Gaza are reading and learning math in tents. Education has been repeatedly disrupted in Gaza over recent years, both because of Israel's attacks and the COVID-19 pandemic. Salem said, "We need to protect the schools. They must not be exposed to bombing and destruction. Every aspect of education has been affected. Kindergartens have even been attacked by the Zionist regime." Sadiq Al-Khuzur, spokesperson for the education ministry in Gaza, said, "Israel does not consider that Palestinians have a right to education. Israel has destroyed our schools and disrupted the process of scientific and intellectual development." Zoha Al-Daba is a 12-year-old girl from Al-Zaytun, east of Gaza City. Her family had to evacuate their home and head for Khan Yunis. She said, "The occupation destroyed my school. Why is Israel attacking education?" Zoha does not know how many children from her school have been martyred in this war. She said, "I miss books and school activities. I used to spend a long time in school. Now we spend all our time in a tent. I want my old routine back."
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1520 to 1620 UTC on the following frequencies. 31 meters, 9,650 kilohertz for the Indian subcontinent, and FM 91.5 MHz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAT 5 and Intelsat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is pastoday.ir/en. And now you can listen to Arabi English Radio by your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, P.O. Box 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about our audio quality and other means. Thank you.
Every night and every day, every night and every day, never forget to say, La ilaha illallah, never forget to say, La ilaha illallah.
RIB English Radio, a herald of unity and solidarity amongst Islamic denominations.
Here I am, pleading at your door. Send me your mercy, send me your peace, or I am lost for sure.
Hadith of the day.
Here I am, yearning for your cure. This humble servant will be diverted from you no more, no more.
You're listening to Hadith of the Day on RIB English Radio with Sheikh Ammar.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad. We have been discussing about the qualities of Shia. That means a Shia has to have some certain qualities. Well, we cannot decide ourselves for ourselves as being Shia that this is the meaning of Shia. No. Shia means those who love Ahlul Bayt and Ahlul Bayt love them. So we are going to have the qualities which is described by Ahlul Bayt alayhi salatu wasalam. If they say be like this, be like that, do like this, don't do like that, that means if we follow them, then we can say we are Shia. Otherwise, we are the lovers of Ahlul Bayt, and still we are in safe side. We are good because we love Ahlul Bayt. But make sure, love is out of our desires. I can love thousands of things. I love my car, I love my home, I love my family, and I love Ahlul Bayt. This is not enough. When you love Ahlul Bayt, and in result, Ahlul Bayt love you, that means you are true Shia. So this is dual-side relationship. Here, in this hadith, I'm going to explain the first point which has been discussed in this hadith by Imam Sadiq alayhi salatu wasalam, where he says, Al-Wara is the first quality, piety is the first quality of a Shia. So we are going to discuss a little more about piety. There's another hadith from Imam Ja'far Sadiq alayhi salatu wasalam, where he says, Inna la na'uddu ar-rajul mu'minan hatta yakuna li jami' amrina muttabi'an muridan. We are not going to consider you as a follower, as a true follower, unless you follow our all guidance. I can say like I just follow 20% and 80% I don't like it, 50% I follow and another 50% I don't like it. Let's say 99% I follow and 1%, no, it's not going to happen. If you follow Ahlul Bayt, follow them from A to Z. Otherwise, you are not the true follower, according to Imam Ja'far Sadiq alayhi salatu wasalam, where he says, "Inna la na'uddu ar-rajul mu'mina." We are not going to count upon you. We are not going to consider you as a mu'min unless حتى يكون لجميع أمرنا متبعا مريدا. Unless you listen our words, you listen our guidance, you follow our guidance, you take our words in whole as complete, first of all. And then, ألا وإن من ألا وإن من اتباع أمرنا وإرادته الورع. If one wants to follow Imam Jafar Sadiq عليه الصلاة والسلام, then he has to decide for it. By force, no, you cannot. If my father is telling you have to do this, you have to do this, and then I say, yes, I'm Shia because my father told me I have to follow this. No. Just listen to Ahlul Bayt. Be convinced with them. Try to understand their philosophy, their what they want from you. Then you want it. Doing with your willing. Allah wa inna min ittiba'i amrina wa iradatihi alwara. When you follow willingly Ahlul Bayt, and you really want it, that means you really want to follow Ahlul Bayt with the love, with the respect, with accepting them as your leaders, then go through wara. فَتَزَيَّنُوا بِهِ يَرْحَمَكُمُ اللَّهِ. Make yourself beautiful with wara, with piety. That means you are not going to be beautiful in the eyes of Ahlul Bayt unless you really listen to Ahlul Bayt, you understand Ahlul Bayt, and you follow Ahlul Bayt. فَتَزَيَّنُوا بِهِ يَرْحَمَكُمُ اللَّهِ. And then Allah is going to mercy on you. وَكَبِّدُوا عَدَانَا. And then stop the enemies of Ahlul Bayt from criticizing you. Don't do bad things. So don't let them criticize you. And then bihi, with the help of wara, yan'ashkumullah. And then you can elevate yourself in the eyes of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. And then you can go higher into the eyes of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. And this is the goal and this is the meaning of wara. Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad. Wassalamu alaykum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
That was Sheikh Ammar in the program Hadith of the Day on RIB English Radio.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad. Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad. اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد.
Doing a sound from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story. In
what is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
Hello, welcome to The Spotlight. I'm Kaveh Tapwai. What's happening in the Gaza Strip is reminiscent of the starved Yemeni children, a war that was backed and supported by the U.S. In the Gaza Strip, Palestinians are dying of hunger, especially children, in the northern part of the Gaza Strip. 500,000 Palestinians are fighting for their lives from starvation. There now is no doubt that Israel, backed by the U.S., is using food as a weapon of war, a war crime in itself. In this edition of The Spotlight, we will look at how systematically Israel is ethnically cleansing Palestinians, even though there is a ceasefire agreement that is being discussed, although chances of that is very thin. First, let me introduce our guests for this edition of The Spotlight. Mukhabir Abu Saida is a professor of political science at Al-Azhar University, who joins us from Cairo. Also joining us is Daniel Shaw, academic and commentator, who joins us from New York. Gentlemen, welcome. It's another grim day for the Palestinians in the Gaza Strip, but we're looking at the starvation factor here. 2.4 million Palestinians, roughly. Mukhabir Abu Saida, I'm going to start with you first. Of which 500,000 are fighting for their lives due to starvation. The food insecurity obviously engulfs the entire population. UNRWA has said it has not been able to deliver food in over a month. There is aid going in, but not only does it not reach the Palestinians, when it does, they get killed in the process. Do you think that Israel is using food as a weapon, which is a war crime in itself, against the Palestinian population?
Well, good evening. The quick answer to your question is yes. This is what Israel has been doing for the past 5 months, especially against the Palestinians who are stuck and trapped in the north of Gaza, who did not leave at the beginning of this war 5 months ago, and now they are very much trapped and stuck in the north of Gaza. And very much Israel doesn't allow humanitarian assistance and food to reach to the north of the Gaza Strip. And to the best of my knowledge, some Palestinians have died as a result of hunger, and also hundreds of thousands of Palestinians in the north of Gaza are eating animals' food. They have been eating tree leaves to try to survive. The situation there is very catastrophic. I have two brothers who are still based in the north of Gaza. Sometimes I talk to them whenever there are communications with them, mobile communications. The situation is more than catastrophic, more than tragic. One simple reason, Israel is very much using hunger and starvation as a weapon to try to drive the Palestinians from the north back to the south. Even though it's been 5 months since Israel has started this military operation against the Palestinians in Gaza, it seems to me that Israel is still insisting on evacuating the north of Gaza from the Palestinians and drive them to the south, even though their life or their livelihood in the south is not going to be better. Roughly 1.5 million Palestinians in Rafah in the south of Gaza are also facing death and facing Israeli pounding day after day. It's a very catastrophic situation. And the least I can say about that, what the International Court of Justice said about a month ago, what Israel is doing, there is a plausible reason to believe that Israel is committing genocide against the Palestinian people in Gaza. That's the least that can be said about what is happening now.
Did you say that you have two brothers that are in the north of the Gaza Strip?
Yes, I do have two brothers with their families are still in the north of Gaza, yes.
All right, we're going to get into that a little bit because that's where the core of the 500,000 Palestinians who are dying of starvation is. But Daniel Shah, when you take a look at what Israel is doing, another prevention are the aid trucks. There are roughly 2,000 aid trucks that are at the crossings that are not being allowed to get into the Gaza Strip. And if there are aid trucks that are going into the Gaza Strip, they target the aid trucks where the most recent one, where two occasions of massacres happened, but the one that caught the world's attention, that's now being labeled as the Flower Massacre. Bullets were discovered on the ones that were killed. What is the story with that? Why would they do that, do you think?
Colonialism is humiliation. Colonialism is complete control. It was with French colonialism in Algeria. It was with the British and Dutch Afrikaners in South Africa. It was with the U.S. Attacks against Iraq, Afghanistan, Libya, the dirty war against Syria, the sanctions against Iran and Venezuela. And it's no different with Israeli Zionism against the Palestinian people since 1948. It's been a long, slow, and now accelerated process of ethnic cleansing, of apartheid. The fact that we have to even say these words out loud in 2024, it harkens back to 1492 and to 1620 when the pilgrims first massacred the Wampanoags. And to think that so many of our people across the United States, across the quote-unquote Western world, still stand on the side of colonialism, white supremacy, and Zionism is unconscionable for me. The Holocaust is being televised. The genocide is being televised. There's no excuse to not look at alternative sources of information. We know that the Zionists have done everything to control the narrative over this. And when we make that point, they accuse us of anti-Semitic tropes for telling the truth. But the point is that the mainstream media, from CNN to Fox to the New York Times, is completely complicit in this genocide, and history is recording this.
Taking a look at what the U.S. Role is over here, let's go back to the most recent active role that the U.S. played when it comes to food, Mukhabar Abbasada, and that is the food drop that took place, airdropping and parachuting these parcels. 38,000, we understand, sandwiches and dates, I believe. And you're looking at the 500,000 that are dying of starvation with 2.4 million who are hungry. Why do you think the U.S. would do something like that, the ratio being so low in terms of the number of food parcels, knowing that there's so many that are dying as a result of starvation?
Well, that definitely is a very good question here. Well, let me say that I think the U.S. decided at the end of the day to airdrop food for the starving Palestinians in the Gaza Strip for two reasons. One is that the massacre that took place on the early morning of last Thursday, a week ago, which, as you mentioned, you referred to it as the flower massacre or the flower carnage that Israel was responsible for, that led to the death of more than 100 Palestinians and the injury of many hundreds of others. According to reports from the U.S., that the U.S. administration was not happy with the Israeli government that is not allowing food to reach to the north. So the U.S. decided to airdrop food, which didn't really mean a lot for the thousands of Palestinians who are hungry and starving in the north of Gaza. And second, I think it's more of like a PR campaign by the U.S. The U.S. Internally, among the American people who believe that this current administration led by President Joe Biden has done a very poor job when it comes to the Palestinians and helping the Palestinians who are facing death and starvation. And also, I think the U.S. is trying to improve its image among the region, among the residents of the Middle East region, who basically look at the U.S. as a partner and at least a complicit in this war of genocide against the Palestinians in Gaza. And I think the U.S. decided to do that to try to make itself look much better. But again, as you just mentioned, the amount of food which was dropped by the U.S. on areas of the Gaza Strip doesn't satisfy the minimum need of the hundreds of thousands of Palestinians who are hungry. And if they are not dying of Israeli pounding, they are, some of them are now dying of hunger and starvation.
All right, Daniel Shah, to dig deeper into this, you know, this is a very calculated move. This 38,000 figure, I don't think this figure just came out of the blue. I'm sure there were some who sat and analyzed the situation and figured out a number that needs to be airdropped, knowing full well that this is not going to meet the standards and the demand that's on the ground. Do you think that perhaps the U.S., in consultation with Israel, wants the starving Palestinians to be used as a tool in order to convince Hamas, you know, this truce talks or ceasefire talks that are happening, to convince Hamas to agree to this temporary ceasefire, that maybe it's using that as a tool?
Zionism, with full U.S. backing, is using any tools that they can. This is an informational war on Palestine, and it has been since 1948. Of course, it's a military war. They're now using starvation and dehydration on day 154 against 2.3 million civilians. And we don't hear the Zionists ever recognize, and they never will, the humanity of Palestinians. They label every single Palestinian baby, child, teenager, mother, elder, family member as Hamas, Hamas, Hamas. No one stopped to ask on the Zionist side, do the Palestinians have a right to defend themselves? They always talk about the Israeli right to violence and self-defense. Well, what about the oppressed? What about the occupied? What about the colonized? The world is fully awake, the Muslim world, the Arab world, the third world. But here I'm in New York City and across the United States. There's such a dictatorship over information, over the media. They pretend to believe in democracy. But they don't, because overwhelmingly, specifically among young people, this genocide is extremely unpopular. And now they're going after TikTok. They've threatened to come after our TikTok at Midwestern Marks and many other organizations. So I think the hypocrisy for them to talk about freedom of speech and freedom of press, and certainly this number of 38,000 meals is extremely paltry. But I think they're doing it, too, so they can try to cover their backsides and one day say, well, look, we had these airlifts, so we were not complicit in the starvation and Holocaust of the Palestinian people in Gaza.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
Mukhabir Abu Saida, let me ask you this. Do you think people understand the scale of the involvement of the U.S. when it comes to this genocidal war? I mean, just the day before, the report came out that the U.S. has quietly approved and delivered more than 100 separate foreign military sales, amounting to thousands of precision-guided bombs, munitions, all kinds of bunker buster bombs, etc. I mean, this is the reason why, in one way form or another, there are starving Gazans, okay? So the U.S. is complicit in that regard because of this military assistance to a large degree. What do you think about the fact that the U.S. has continually provided Israel with military assistance?
Well, of course the Palestinian people know about the U.S. role in this war. Of course the Palestinian people know that the U.S. is more than complicit. The U.S. in other ways is a partner to this Israeli killing an Israeli pounding of the Palestinians in the Gaza Strip. And I can tell you for a number of reasons. First, the U.S. has used its veto power three times. Since the start of this war on October 7th until now, the U.S. has used its veto power three times to block any U.N. resolution at the U.N. Security Council to reach an immediate ceasefire in the Gaza Strip and put an end to this Israeli genocide and Israeli killing of the Palestinians. Second, from the beginning of this war, Israel deployed its warplane carriers in the Mediterranean to try to deter other countries or other non-state actors to get involved in this war between Israel and the Palestinian resistance. And also, as you just mentioned, the U.S. has also supplied Israel with a lot of weaponry. Ships and airplanes full of ammunition and weapons have been provided to Israel over the past 5 months. And in addition to that, the U.S. is repeating day after day that Israel has the right to defend itself. Israel has the right to defend itself. Israel has the right to do whatever it finds it. I mean, lately we just started to hear that the U.S. patience with Netanyahu and the right wing in Israel is fading away as a result of extreme right-wing policies by Netanyahu's partner in this government. But yes, the Palestinian people, they are aware of the fact that the U.S. has been helping Israel politically, economically, and militarily. And it's, I mean, in the age of social media and the age of information revolution, I think you cannot really hide what the U.S. has been doing. Not during this war, but even before the war erupted, or before this war erupted in October 7th.
The ceasefire talks that are taking place, which are hanging by a thread, Daniel Shah, has a lot of sticking points and divisive issues in it. One of them is the request by Hamas for this to be a permanent ceasefire, but yet Israel and the U.S. are adamant about it being a partial ceasefire, not a permanent one. Why is there such an insistence on that, do you think, by the U.S. side?
Yeah, one is left to wonder. I mean, the U.S. government has the highly paid intelligence experts who are monitoring 25 hours per day, 8 days a week, everything that goes on, not just in Palestine, but in Ukraine and Taiwan and Guyana, and always waging these proxy wars. Why would they want an all-out genocide of an indigenous people of the Middle East on Biden's record, on the U.S. government's record? Well, that's because whether it's Biden or